endeavor.
Really?
I don't know what all that was.
Huh. Oh, there you are.
They had left your mics on, so I just didn't know if you knew.
Good evening.
Oh, thank you.
Good evening. Good evening. If you'd like to have a seat, we'll... Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to have a seat, we'll commence with the board meeting tonight. Thank you. The board met in closed session and discussed anticipated litigation. And we are now ready to open the meeting of February 21st. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? I want to make one suggestion, which is that we move the item number 9.03. Well, it is 9.03 to 9.01. And I'm sorry, I know that some of you may have an older version of this blue sheet, so it actually is 9.01. Okay. And that will accommodate Mr. Bennett's trip back to Sacramento, perhaps. So we are now moving on with... Are there any other changes in the order of business? So we'll move on with the approval of minutes of February 7th, 2017. Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Approval of the minutes of February 17th. And now we have our representatives from our schools. Hello there.
Hi.
I'm sorry, I cannot see your name.
Ellis Fryer.
Ellis Fryer from Arbay High School.
Yeah. I'm back. Well, we had a really exciting week at Morabay High School with some very extreme weather conditions. Fortunately, teachers and students and administration worked together and ensured safety for everyone on campus. So we managed to work through that one. In other news, our 2017 Honor Choir visited Salinas High School and had an outstanding performance. Katrina Seams, Autumn Boyd, and Eileen Ramirez of the Morabay High School FFA received their California State FFA degree for their demonstrated commitment and accomplishment, which added up to over 500 hours of work. And during those 500 hours, they raised a significant amount of funds, which is pretty impressive. We also had a Women in STEM career seminar on February 16th. This panel of women ranged from computer engineers to civil engineers and field biologists. They shared their stories of experiences to a room of 100 girls in the Morabay High School lecture demo room. And also there were a few girls from Templeton who made the journey down, as well as the entire seminar was actually live streamed to audiences. I don't know exactly how wide it went, but all over the state, I believe. And this event was put on by our school's Society of Women Engineers Club. And... with help from the school district as well. Our school recently congratulated Zainab Badi, who placed first runner-up in the Slow Arts Obispo Poetry Out Loud event on February 10th. And our school is proud to present our amazing dance team during their next show on this Friday. They will be performing dances choreographed by members of the team alongside with musicians from our own band and jazz band. This week at Morabay, we're celebrating National FFA Week with fun activities to show students what FFA is all about. This week-long celebration includes a cowboy hat decoration activity, dance lessons, dress-up day, and a carnival with a petting zoo and food trucks. At the end of the week, we'll all be celebrating with a school-wide barn dance. It should be pretty fun. We also had our American Legion Boys and Girls State delegates announced Ethan Carroll was nominated for Boys State, and Hiram was nominated as his stand-in, as well as Callie Fisher was named delegate for Girls State with Scout Bittleman as her alternate. So coming up in March, we have an incredibly busy month in Morro Bay High School ASB with events such as Mini Mock Rock, March Madness Lunch Basketball Tournament, our Neon Dance and Rock Genre Spirit Week leading up to one of our biggest events all year, Mock Rock. So that's what's going on in Morro Bay.
Thank you, Ellis. You are welcome to stay with us, or you are also welcome to excuse yourself and go attend to your schoolwork or after-school activities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is the Teach Foundation Grant Awards. We have Terry Main presenting those.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here again for the Teach Awards, which has now become an annual event instead of a semi-annual event. The teachers seem to think that that works fine with them. We hope to get it done a little bit sooner in the school year, so next year look for us in the fall instead of in the spring. And I have with me Kathy Ahern tonight, longtime Teach Board member and a teacher at Laguna Middle School. So this year we had a lot of applications. It was wonderful to see how many great things are happening in the schools. We have made 27 grant awards totaling $16,823. And in keeping with our tradition, we have a number of teachers who've kindly agreed to appear tonight to tell you about their grants and the great things they're doing for their kids. So we will get started.
Good evening. My name is Erin Wins, and I'm representing the kindergarten teachers at Bishop's Peak Elementary. And we're very excited to use our grant money for headphones for our iPads so the students can listen to stories and have an interactive experience as well in the classroom. Thank you.
Hey, Zara. It's a little intimidating to walk up here. My name is Shelley Ferrari. I'm the intervention teacher and instructional coach at Del Mar. We, the Teach Foundation, we're extremely grateful for. Jim Vesterholst, who's been one amazing volunteer, who's done a lot of work with Pacheco, we invited him to come help us at Del Mar. And he's taught us all how to integrate coding into our STEAM program. And that has continued to grow. And he's teaching me how to use robotics to use the coding, so now we're taking it to the next level thanks to the Teach Foundation. So this will impact our fourth and fifth grade STEAM rotation and our students at Discovery Days. So thank you.
Hello, I'm Terry Wright, and I'm the library tech at Del Mar, and because of our Teach grant, we were able to bring author Alexis O'Neill just about a week and a half ago for a full day. She was incredible. She's a former elementary school teacher, and now she teaches through UCLA Extension. She teaches writing, so she's awesome. But she gave two assemblies, one for primary and one for upper grade kids, and two writing workshops where 120 third through fifth graders could just participate in learning some techniques and skills in writing, and we couldn't have done it without the Teach Grant, so we're just grateful. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Cherie Javi. I'm a speech-language pathologist, and I work out at Los Ranchos Elementary School. And I wrote a grant for an application to use on an iPad with students who are nonverbal or limited in their verbal skills. There are two classes at my elementary school that serve a K kindergarten class and a first grade class that serve students who have limited verbal skills, actually quite ranges, but this is an app I can use with many different students to teach them a different language and increase their communication skills, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
notes just in case. My name is Sunshine Frawley, and I teach transitional kindergarten at Monarch Grove, and I'm very gratefully receiving a grant for ramps and balls and stands. To the casual observer, people would see my students with those things and think they're just playing, but actually they're learning physics. We all know that if you make a ramp steeper, the ball's going to go faster, but young children don't necessarily know that without experiences with those materials. It's the perfect STEM activity combining science, technology, engineering, and math, but in addition, since it doesn't require necessarily spoken language, dual language learners or children with limited language can be right next to their peers equally actively engaged in the curriculum. In addition, this activity facilitates communication because children get so excited to share what they've done with their classmates. So I want to thank the Teach Foundation for understanding that I wasn't asking to purchase toys, but instead asking for materials with a highly educational value. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ken Hotelling, and I'm one of the sixth grade teachers here at Los Osos Middle School. And I did buy toys. The sixth graders, they hang out in kind of the western part of the campus, and there's not a whole lot to do in the beginning of the school. And as they kind of, you know, come over from elementary school, long gone is the playgrounds. And so for to give them something to do, what we're going to be doing is constructing this really fun collaborative game called Nine Square, in which we're going to be creating about a 7-foot-tall rectangular prism, and all the kids will kind of play underneath it, and it's kind of like a volleyball type of a game. They'll have to work together as they assemble the game each morning and work together as they disassemble it, and we kind of put it down each night. And it builds a lot of teamwork, builds a lot of fun times, and plus it gives them something else to do. So thank you to the Teach Foundation for helping the kids have a lot of fun and a lot of giggles in the morning. So thank you very much.
Good evening. I'm Raquel Meinke, and I am the STEAM Art and Design teacher here at Los Osos. And I received a grant for a conveyor belt tabletop dryer for our screen printing. So we screen print t-shirts, and a few years ago I received a teach grant actually for the printing press, and now we can up our production and do things more professionally. So we're going from about 3 minutes a shirt to dry it and once in a while scorching a shirt to being able to produce upwards to about 100 shirts per hour.
Wow.
So thank you to the Teach Grant Foundation.
Hi, I'm Caroline Pedersen. I'm also a sixth grade teacher here at Los Osos Middle School. And we're really lucky to have Hearst Castle so close by, and the Teach Foundation has generously donated a large portion to get all of our sixth grade, all of our 165 or so sixth graders to get to go on a field trip to Hearst Castle, which greatly enhances their social studies curriculum of ancient civilizations. There's lots of Egyptian and Greek and Roman influences in the art and architecture there. So we are really super grateful to the Teach Foundation for that. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Lindley Sainsbury, and I'm an 8th grade English teacher here at Los Osos Middle School, and I'm also the Drama Club advisor. And our Teach Grant will help fund our production of The Wonderfully Wicked Oz, which I actually wrote and will be producing in March. The Teach Foundation, though, has been a longtime supporter of drama here at Los Osos Middle School. It's part of our ongoing program that we get amazing support from the Teach Foundation to maintain this program, which services about 60 students a year and also allows us to work with Cal Poly and the PCPA theater group. So it's a real cross-curricular thing in the community, and we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Nice to see all of you this evening. Terry Jacobson from Pacific Beach, and once again, I'm thanking the Teach Foundation for giving us a grant to get the guest artist in the classroom with our students. They've already begun to work with Madeline is her name this year. Her last name is about this long. We call her Mrs. S. And they're doing watercolor. They've done some caricatures, which were very interesting. And now we're going to move into some ceramics. So we certainly appreciate it, and they get an experience they otherwise would not have. So thank you.
In English for you, I'm Kristen Nussbaum. I teach sign language, American Sign Language, and English at San Luis Obispo High School. And I want to first say good evening. Thank you for hosting everyone. And secondly, thank you to Teach Foundation for their continued years of support for our trip. At SLO High, I have the luxury of teaching each semester about 125 students who are strongly interested in learning about sign language, and they do a great job in the classroom. And it's great to be able to extend an offer to them to take them to a Deaf Awareness Day in Los Angeles at Disneyland in Anaheim so that they can put their skills to use, but also practice and reach members outside of our local deaf community. Once a month we have local deaf socials, and the students are really invested in going to those, and it just takes it a step further to take them out into a Deaf Awareness Day at Disneyland in March. So thank you to everyone. Thank you to Teach.
Hi, my name is Craig Stewart, and I teach English at San Luis Obispo High School. And we have a new class at San Luis Obispo High School this year called Film Studies. And I've taught it twice now in the trimesters. I'm realizing that one of the challenges of teaching film studies in San Luis Obispo is the access to films for the students. We have one video store, a whole bunch of red boxes, and those red boxes don't have the kind of films that we want to study in them. So I got a grant to get a bunch of films and begin in our library a film section that will, you know, work for hopefully years to come. For the kids to watch the right kind of films to study, to analyze, and to write about. So that's what we're doing. Thanks, Teach Foundation.
Hi, I'm Tom Weinschenk from San Luis Obispo High School, and I've been doing this for almost 25, 26 years. I can't thank Terry and the Teach Foundation enough. We are going as a Latin club to the Getty Villa in Malibu on March 17th, and we're able, with the help of the Teach Foundation, to take all the kids with no cost. We really are so grateful for them and all their work. We're going to be visiting one of the finest exhibits of Greek and Roman art available with a perfect floor plan of an actual Roman house, so it fits really well with our curriculum. And on the way home, we're going to visit the Classics Department at UC Santa Barbara. And we get to talk to professors, talk to graduate students, talk to students about what college life is like, and specifically what it's like to be a classic student at UCSB. So again, many, many thanks for the continued support from Teach.
I'm Debbie Kramer. I'm the library tech at Sinsheimer Elementary, and our Teach grant is for an interactive Lego wall, which we're all very excited about. The Lego wall will help support curriculum that's being taught in the classroom. Students will be able to remove the bases from the Lego wall and work in small groups and collaborate on projects, whether that's ancient civilization in sixth grade, state reports in fifth grade, California history in fourth grade, and so on. It's a way that students can be creative and learn by doing. So we're very grateful to the Teach Grant. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brittany Chicamo. I'm representing fourth grade at Sinsheimer, and our Teach Grant allows us to, Debbie's taking it around and show you, allows us to do a STEAM project that we call mission tiles. So we can take concepts of measurement and geometry, and that helps us sketch the mission, the San Luis Obispo mission. That's our connection to California history. And then we get the art lessons to help us fill in with these beautiful materials. The tiles themselves go to the students afterwards. They're fired, and when they come out, they look gorgeous. So as you can see, we're about halfway through. And the whole time we're learning about California history content as well. So thank you, Teach Foundation.
I had to bring notes, too. My name is Michelle Hedrick. I'm the library tech at Hawthorne Elementary School. And I'd like to thank the Teach Foundation for funding 15 playaways for our elementary school library. A playaway is a very small, about the size of a deck of cards, audio book that they can, it's pre-recorded, they can stick it in their pocket or in their backpack, plug in their earbuds. And my hope, along with my resource teacher, is that we'll be able to let some of the kids who have a hard time accessing those more difficult texts be able to listen to them and comprehend them and participate in our Battle of the Books or get hooked on a new book or a new series by starting with the audiobook. So thank you, Teach Foundation.
Well, that was quite a varied group of activities. I think that we can all just really give a great round of applause to all of our teachers. I'm so grateful for all they do for the students. We're very fortunate that our Fund at the Community Foundation has done well, and so we don't anticipate that we're going to have any difficulties in continuing to fund these classroom enrichment projects in the near future. But should anyone out there watching or attending want to help with our efforts here to support classroom education, they can give to the Teach Foundation through the Community Foundation. We have both an endowment fund and a pass-through fund, so if anybody has a project, a classroom, particular activity they want to give directly to, we're a great mechanism for allowing that to happen. So any questions from the board? Okay.
I just would like to thank you for all of the efforts that you put into this for so many years now. And this is the 16th year?
2001, I think, was the founding of TEACH. And so for our dedicated board members who are not here tonight, Dave Bernhard, Steve Jope, Kathy, Aubrey Nash, Ed Harris, and myself, we're kind of the long-standing stewards here.
And it must be very difficult. It's a competitive process. You read through all the applications.
We do. And the only thing I think that I talk to teachers need to make note for is that the Teach Foundation has chosen not to fund technology in the classrooms. By that I mean iPads, Chromebooks, and the like, because that would be an overwhelming demand on our resources, and we can't distinguish the need one classroom would have for those devices over the need another classroom would have. So, and other than that, it's come one, come all, and we always like to spread what we have over as many projects as possible. So we encourage everyone to apply. There's no need, nothing too small or too big.
Mr. Unker.
Could you send either Mrs. Holmes or the board members the contact information in case people want to donate to the Teach Foundation?
Sure, be happy to. Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you. And moving on to correspondence, at this time, the time of the agenda was published, there was no official correspondence unless any of the board members received something by email. Now we'll move on to public comment. This is an opportunity for you to speak to something that is not on the agenda, if you are so inclined, or if you are wanting to speak on a subject matter. We will also be allowing public comment at the time of each of these items.
So we have one formal request using a yellow form to speak, and that would be Craig Stewart, and then I'll open it up for other people.
Good evening. I'm Craig Stewart, and I'm here now as president of the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. And every year the SLCTA does a bingo party for a fundraiser for scholarships. We give about $5,000 or $6,000 a year away to students and our graduating seniors who plan to enter into the teaching profession. And it's a great party every year, bingo and food and, you know, good times. So we'd like to invite every one of you board members who is welcome to come to be our guests at the bingo fundraiser. And so I have tickets for you. It's March 17th. So I'll just give you these tickets, and we hope to see you there, as many or, you know, whatever, who wants to come. But it's a really good party, so I would encourage you to go.
Stay
better, stay, yeah.
Ah.
So there you go.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks, Greg.
Where's
your help?
It's at the Grange Hall. I don't know what they're calling the Grange Hall now, but.
They call it the Grange Hall.
It's still called Grange Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. That's so much fun. I've never been invited before.
And then is there anyone else who would like to address the board? Oh, Mrs. Washmuth.
Hi, I'm Lisa Washmuth from San Luis Obispo High School. I am one of the teachers in the what's now called Family and Consumer Science Department. I teach the Fashion Career Pathways, the Interior Design Career Pathways, and I also run the preschool. On top of that, I am the advisor for FCCLA in my spare time. And we have just gotten back from competition up in the Bay Area, and I have four of our competitors here. When I started at San Luis Obispo High School, we were taking maybe 3 to 4 kids to compete at state, and this year it looks like we're going to have 16 or 17. So I've worked at growing the program, have been successful. You guys have been part of that. Thank you. We are still doing Iron Chef, and it's still successful. And I'm going to let Emily take it away, and then Kim has a little video of our little trip in the pouring rain, and I drove like a grandmother. So I have mothers that were there that didn't want to let their kids go, and I got to text them right now, tell them I'm driving just like a grandma through the rain and all of that. So we made it safe, and it was a good time.
All right. So I'm Emily Streeter. I am the president of FCCLA. And as Ms. Washmuth just mentioned, we had our region competition this Saturday. And so I'm going to let them tell you what they competed in and what place they received.
Hi, I'm Kavai Kiaha. I competed in child development, and I won first place.
I'm Maddie Fletcher. I competed in fashion design and got first place.
Hi, my name's Delaney Romo, and I competed in the chapter and review portfolio, and I got second place.
Yay. And then we also had four more competitors, and I believe we had two more first place, one second place, and one third place.
Wow.
So the first, second, and third place were all in fashion design. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, yes, all our competitors will be moving on to the state level now in April in Riverside. So, yeah.
Congratulations. That's very well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just put together a quick little video. It does have some culinary arts in there, which we don't offer. I'm hoping at some point we do.
Hey, Lisa, what's life event planning?
Life event planning is where a student has to plan an event that will potentially take place in the next year. They have to get resources, businesses that they can get their resources from. They have to have like a variety of them, like a high, low, and medium. They have to get prices for everything. They have to do all the planning for the event. The two girls that competed in that plan to go to Cal Poly. In their ag department, they have event planning, and one has heard that, yes, she's been accepted, so that's awesome. This gives them an edge over other students that don't belong to an organization, is what I always tell them. They need that because everybody's taken all of these standardized tests. It's like you've got to be doing something else and show that there's more to you than just going to school. So it was exciting. One of the girls' sisters is getting married, so they took her wedding and they did that. And so they had to find photographers, florists, a place to have it. And they were kind of overwhelmed, but they did it, and they did a really good job. So that was awesome.
Well, thank you for driving like a grandma and getting them there and back safely. And congratulations, ladies. Those were huge accomplishments.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the board either on an agenda item right now or on not on an agenda item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment.
And we'll move on to superintendent's updates.
So, yeah, just a couple of things for business and budget update. Dr. Prater, and myself met with representatives from PG&E, the county, to kind of talk about the PUC process, you know, update us and kind of dialogue about the kind of the next steps, what happens. So, you know, though kind of a mitigated agreement has, you know, we've all agreed to that, it's not a for sure thing until the PUC approves that agreement. So I just want to make sure everybody understands that this is a process that goes through. There's other groups that are part of it that are looking at the other side of the issue. So we'll continue to take the steps we need to make sure that we're represented the way that we need to be in those proceedings. So just letting the board know that update for that. The other thing was Morro Bay High School on Friday. Wow. It was quite a storm that rolled through this area. All the schools really lost power. But in particular, the wind and rain impact at Morro Bay High School and on the cypress trees throughout that campus, and especially in the front. It was something that once I got there, again, kudos to our staff, to the maintenance staff for being there, to the school staff, to the teachers, the secretaries, the clerical. Everybody did a great job of just kind of making sure the kids were safe in classrooms, kind of dealing with the situation. But and then also a huge thank you to Greenvale Tree Company. So they were right on it, got out. I mean, really took care of, really a not safe situation for our kids. That we finally got cleared up. We felt it was best at noon to let the kids go home at Morro Bay High because of some of the safety concerns. And we lost more trees over the weekend there. So, I mean, it was kind of a disaster zone. So we have checked. Arnie was out all weekend looking at sites, checking everything, make sure school was safe to open today. We're in constant contact with PG&E about our sites and about electricity and power and those types of things. So they're on it. Right now, we've kind of perimetered off the parking area at Morro Bay High School to keep cars from parking in those areas along the cypress trees there. Some of it's kind of an impact probably of the drought with the root structures of those trees. And then it's just so saturated now with water on top of the wind storms that have been coming through. When I was there for that couple of hours early on, I think 6 to 7 trees went down. During that time. It's pretty crazy, unheard of in terms of storms and what's happening. We've kind of cordoned off some space around the big tree in front of Slow High. We had a tree fall at Lambs. We had a tree fall at Del Mar. We had just all over all of our sites kind of little issues like that we're working on, we're dealing with. Anthony is talking with an arborist to kind of set up just do a safety plan kind of each of our sites, looking at all of our trees, see where we're at, so that we can address some of the issues. But it was, unfortunately, at times, you can't tell that the tree, you know, is having major issues, like the one that recently fell at Del Mar about 2 weeks ago. It looked like a normal, healthy tree. Nobody knew until it fell over. So that said, hopefully the arborist will be able to kind of put a plan together for us and let us know where those trees are. You know, definitely in talking with the fire marshal at Morro Bay in particular, really concerned about those cypress trees and what we're going to do there. So we're going to have to look at all of that, kind of make a plan. So I'll be coming back to the board, keeping you updated on where we're at and, you know, trying to find a way to keep our kids safe. And for those of you who don't know, we literally had cypress trees fall in the middle of cars in the parking lot. It was that unsafe in terms of those. We had to block off the whole main entrance way to Morro Bay High School because the trees were literally just falling over. So I don't know if more weather to come over the next month or so, but we're going to be watching it, checking it, you know, making sure that we're trying to take whatever safety measures we can in that situation. But they did a great job in terms of evacuating the site, getting kids to their parents, out to the buses. Annie got the buses there early. So all those things kind of happened coordinated, and so it was good. The other schools were probably bummed that they didn't get to go leave early too, but it was Morro Bay High in particular was a safety issue. Other than that, those are kind of the key things that were happening. And so again, we'll kind of watch this weather and see how it goes.
Those of us who saw the picture on the front of the Tribune really can appreciate the situation that you were addressing there and really appreciate the evacuation and how carefully that was done and safely that was done. Thank you.
Catherine?
Sorry, Marilyn.
I have no financial interest in Greenvale Tree Service. Just want to say that. But I did go out on Friday after all the kids were gone, and they were working, you know, full speed. And then again yesterday, I went out and took a look, and they were still working on that main entrance and then along the side where the tree came down on the Mini Cooper, and they hadn't made it back to the ag buildings yet, where the one building back there is just appears to be demolished. But I would ask about the solar panel. Mm-hmm. It looks like one corner of one panel was damaged. Is that something that Rec Solar would come out and repair, or what happens with that?
So the solar panels are a separate company owns those panels. So we are actually in contact with them. They're going to come out. Anthony's working with them in terms of getting it repaired, whether we repair them, they pay us back, you know, how that works. But so they have their insurance. They have their own insurance. So something like what happened on Friday is it's an act of God, act of nature, they call it, in terms of things that like that happen. And so it's tough in terms of dealing with insurance companies a lot of times with that. But so that we're currently contacting them to kind of talk about those. Our electricians know how to shut them off. So our electricians came out, shut the power, powered them down, unplugged them, because at first we couldn't get anywhere near those trees or that situation until we were able to get that powered down. So that is something that our electricians have been trained in and know about, you know, in terms of how to do that. So there are some issues in terms of solar always continues to take power. So that's something, too, that after 2014, they actually have new mechanisms that will shut the entire solar panel down. So even when you shut it all down, you unplug it, it's still taking electricity. Unless you have this switch that came into being after we had put ours in. So that's something I talked to the fire chief. We found out about Friday, so we're going to check into that.
Can we retrofit to put that?
It's a question that we have with the solar company. So we'll be looking at that as well in terms of that situation. We had another tree fall over the weekend that hit a power pole, middle of campus by the stadium. I mean, it was quite an eventful weekend overall. Lots of things happening on that campus in particular with the wind and the storms. I will tell you that every tree company in the county was busy on Friday. So I drove home to Rio Grande, and I think I saw 20 trees down, and there were tree companies everywhere. So kudos to all the tree companies for helping our entire community, I think, over the past weekend. It was pretty crazy. Rio Grande in particular looked like almost like a tornado went through the town. There were that many trees down. It was pretty crazy.
Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you.
Thanks. I also need to say I went by on Saturday, and Greenvale was
They worked all weekend.
All weekend, and the gentleman was just a great guy, but the damage was, it far exceeded what I thought I was going to see. It was some scary stuff.
And I believe we're now ready for our educational services update.
Great, thank you. Yes, a few things coming up. So we do have the end of the second trimester wrapping up. So elementary conferences are right around the corner. Elementary teachers have early release minimum days at the end of this week as they prepare hard for communicating with parents and students about progress. Second thing I want to tell you about is gathering LCAP feedback. So Mr. Pinkerton and I have started our world tour of every school and have seen a few of you there, so we appreciate that. So it's a good opportunity to explain some of the budget and financial updates as well as get input and feedback from staff around the LCAP. And then at the end, Mandy sends a survey out so that they may send their feedback in addition if they think of things afterwards. So it's a great opportunity to openly communicate and get some good feedback from everyone. I want to send a big congratulations to Pacific Beach that did receive a model continuation high school. So this is a great honor. They had people come talk to the site and interview, and really positive things happening at Pacific Beach. So congratulations to them. Just since we're here at Loam's also, we have some fantastic drama events coming up. You can see Mrs. Sainsbury and Ms. Robinette have worked really hard to create some really neat visual and performing arts opportunities for the kids here. So just want to promote that and say thanks for all your hard work.
And Mrs. Sainsbury wrote the play, wrote the book. I love it. Still there. Okay. And moving on to Measure D update, Mr. Pinkerton again.
Well, we had our Measure D study session on leaseback, and Deidre Sakai from DWK was here to address the board, answer questions about it. We'll be talking about a resolution potentially as well as an RFQ, RFP later on in the board agenda today. Other than that, really, the design build teams have really kicked off. So most of our projects at both Morro Bay High School as well as San Luis Obispo High School are part of the design build construction delivery model. So Mr. Holcomb, while I was at Morro Bay High, unfortunately, fighting trees, Mr. Holcomb and Mr. Plaza were meeting with the contractor as well as the architect. And it's that positive relationship where they're really looking, diving in, seeing what are the things that we can do now in terms of cost cutting, cost savings, you know, looking at alternatives, and having that conversation now is so important as we plan out the entire budget for all of the projects. So it was an eventful meeting, I heard, from both Mr. Holcomb as well as Mr. Plaza in terms of some of the ideas that came up and things for us to potentially save money down the road. And I do know Anthony and Steve are at Cash today. They're going to attend, hopefully with Bellevue Santa Fe, to talk about the potential money to help Bellevue Santa Fe in terms of their what we're able to get accomplished at that site with our Measure D dollars.
And Mr. Pinkerton, don't go anywhere because I think we're now going to talk about the resolution. This is the resolution to adopt.
Tough to see.
So this is the resolution to about adopting the best value procedures and guidelines.
Yeah, so Ms. Holmes, if you go to the actual presentation first, we'll start there. Talk a little bit about design, bid, build, lease-leaseback, the difference. So, again, as I stated earlier, we have several projects at Morro Bay High School, San Luis Obispo High School, where we went out and we set up a design, build, construction delivery model for those. So we had firms come out, best price, value. The rest of the projects at both Morro Bay High School and SLO High School, we're focused on a design, bid, build, construction delivery model. So that was set kind of early on in terms of doing half as design, build, half as design, bid, build. And so in January, we had some changes in the law that came about that changed and brought about a little bit more solidification of the lease-leaseback delivery method. And so that was kind of the study session was focused on that with our attorney and talking about the legalities of it and how it laid out and the process. Initially on, when we first started the Measure D process, that was kind of the focused delivery method that we wanted to really work with the board on and have that as our main delivery method. Why? Because it allows you to both look at qualifications as well as price and competition. So I'm going to talk about kind of some of the pros and cons of both the design bid build as well as design build, and then give you kind of a list of the projects that we're looking at potentially for lease-leaseback. So first of all, so the two, again, design build was one that we've talked about a lot, but Kim, if you go all the way through, we're going to go all the way through to the next slide. So delivery methods, go ahead and you can go through all the pros and cons. Just list them up. So in terms of design bid build, it's kind of your old stature. This is the way things are done, right? You have a presentation, your architects make plans, you put the plans on the street, the different contractors go through, they develop kind of what their bid is, they, you know, seal the envelope, you get the bids back, you open them all up at the same time, and you're able to hopefully, what it's been focused on is that if there's competition, you're going to get the lowest price under that delivery method. That through that process of bidding and, you know, people having to kind of garner their own position, that will come about. So it's a tried and true method. People are used to it. It's what's been done for a long time. Most contractors are pretty comfortable with that. Most agencies, including our own, have processes in place to kind of go through that design bid build. We actually did all of our projects over the last summer. Word design bid build work. And one of the other pros is kind of you kept this separation from the contractor and the architect. So that can be good and bad in terms of the relationship, right? Because you want somebody who's going to oversee the architect. You want somebody, the architect, to oversee the contractor as they go through the process of building. Now, some of the difficulties of design bid build is that early on, you can't get that, like we're dealing with right now with design build, you can't get that contractor in to look at the plans prior to it. So what we found early last summer was some of our plans were missing items. Had we had that contractor on board to look at those prior to the final price being set, the final bid being made, we would have hopefully been able to catch some of those items, fix them, change them, put them into the base bid so that it doesn't come back as change orders. Because when there's a certain perception about change orders and what they mean and why we have to do them, right? I mean, that's just something about it. Yet, had that been in the plan initially and the price was higher at initial bid, hey, that should have been part of the base bid, right? But something about change orders has kind of a negative connotation to it as you go through the process. So in terms of that, without having that contractor relationship early on, which is possibility of both design build and lease-leaseback, you're more apt to have change orders. There are things that maybe the contractor sees in the contract or in the plans, and those come out later on while the project, which we saw plenty of those throughout the summer as we did our last jobs. You would hope that the architects would have this perfect plan laid out, that everything would be in there and it would be absolutely perfect. What we found last summer was that's not necessarily the case. There's always going to be some. And unfortunately, you expect to see some unforeseen issues. You open up a wall, kind of like we did at C.L. Smith, and there were no doors, there was no insulation. I mean, you expect to see some of that. But there are other things that happen in the plans that, you know, having disabled parking as part of the tennis court project, things that should have been in the plan. And so that would have hopefully gotten caught and noticed early on in that lease-leaseback, that design build process. Bids for contractors then, because they're going in, can be kind of best guess at the time, right? So they're making some assumptions when they bid this job of what it's going to be and what the plans mean. We've run into that recently with the dewatering system at, like, the pool. Plans look like it's supposed to be there. Not really clear in terms of really what is a dewatering system, should it have been? So that becomes a change order discussion, kind of a battle between the contractor and the district in terms of that dewatering system, whether it needs to be there. If there's too much work out there, which is one of our major concerns coming up in the next few years, especially in our area, in terms of pool of contractors, what's going to happen to those bids? We saw that a little bit this summer. So we had a couple of sewer projects where people were really busy. All of a sudden, we bid out the sewer work, and it was three times more than the first job that was bid a month ago. So it's a bit of a concern in terms of those bids. Now, we can reject all bids. We can go back out to bid, which is what we did in that that circumstance. But so there, the potential of the pool and what types of bids you get can vary depending on the number of contractors, the number of people bidding. And so when we get our estimates, it'll show. It'll show kind of a ratio of if, you know, 0 to 5 people bid, you can expect this amount. 5 to 10 people, you can expect this amount, and it kind of goes up. So the more people that bid, the better your bid results should be. Lastly, in terms of the contractor's experience, you have to choose the lowest bidder. There's absolutely no qualifications on the selection process. So that's just one of the cons, potentially. So in terms of lease-leaseback, so pros, again, the separation of architect and contractor, which we discussed. In this case, you can, and people have done it differently, and that's kind of what happened with the Davis case, with some of the other cases where they didn't necessarily have the competitive element tied to the selection process of both the in the RFP. So that's something now, in terms of the law, it's definitely set out, that there is a price component that is competitive process that has to be tied to this, much like what we just did with our design build. And so that, you know, for the board, you got to see what the people's bids were for their profit, overhead, and general conditions. It was straight in public that's what kind of laid out. But the nice part is you can also look at qualifications with this process. So it's not just price, though that becomes, you know, if you look at the actual scoring matrix, that is a huge component of selecting somebody's the price. But you can still also look at, you know, if it's close, if the prices are close, you can look at qualifications. You can look at kind of the work that they've done. Have they done a lot of score work? What's you know, how do people like them? How's it tied in? Have they done a good job? Have they been sued a lot? You know, all those types of issues can be part of the process of selecting. In terms of district selects firm based on the RFQ, contractor has input on the design. So we can set it up to where they actually, you know, once the plan is done, you can bring the contractor and they can actually look at the plan itself. So they can weed out some of the issues about constructability and, you know, materials and supplies and ways to do things, planning, scheduling, all of those types of things can be built in potentially to this plan, which then hopefully will help when we finally set a price, when you finally have those subcontractors bid on the project and you're moving forward with a much more, I would say, true number necessarily than what's going to happen in terms of not having that as part of the process. You set up a teamwork relationship. So a lot of times when you're in this lease-leaseback relationship with the contractor, it's you're a team. You're working together, right? So it's kind of a set establishment. In terms of the last one, there's, for us, what's I think the bigger concern at both high schools is we have several projects that are going to be happening over the next 5 years. And so if we can select one contractor to do 4 or 5 projects at Slow High, one contractor to do 4 or 5 projects at Slow High, then we're going to have potentially 2 contractors working at Morro Bay High, 2 contractors at the most working at San Luis Obispo High School. So instead of each person, each project, having a separate contractor and you got separate job trailers and all those types of things. So there's a little bit of a positive in just having being able to narrow that down. In terms of the cons for it, you know, especially now with the new financing component aspect of it, as well as the lease process that's part of the lease-leaseback. So are contractors familiar with the new aspects of it? There are some new legalities in terms of with a lease-leaseback that they have to use a skilled labor force requirement. So that's a little bit different in terms of the design bid build does not. So the new design build law does, you do have to have skilled labor force as well as with the new lease-leaseback. And then lastly, in terms of the price. So we would hope to alleviate any price concerns in terms of with the public and having all of that public in terms of the profit margin, the general conditions, just like we did with design build and put the numbers right on the board for everybody to see right in the public. And I think that basically quashes a lot of issues in terms of, you know, public perception, right, that in terms of best price. So our hope is that we're going to be able to utilize this design or this project delivery model to still get the lowest price, but yet have the positives outlined above. So that's kind of what we looked at. So in terms of the actual projects on the next slide, what would fit into this potential mold? At Morro Bay High School, these are the design. So again, these are all the design bid build projects that are coming up at both comprehensive high schools, as well as we have the C.L. Smith main office and front school modernization. Now, there may be other projects in the future, Bishop's Peak, NPR, multipurpose room, Baywood classroom remodel. So there may be other things in the future that we come forward, but these are the three really that we're kind of focused on right now because they're really upcoming. So J-Wing Student Services Building is ready this summer, ready to go. San Luis Obispo High School, the annex classroom is going to start as soon as school is out. The old gym, the new student support center will start in the fall. So a lot of these projects are they're very timely in terms of us going through this process and getting started on this. So we do have to make some decisions in terms of for the board whether this is a possibility or not for us to move forward with. Just later on, we're going to ask to issue the RFQ, RFP, should the resolution pass. But it's definitely, I think, in talking to both Mr. Plazo, Mr. Holcomb, myself, looking at the options, this seems like the best route for us to go, especially for these projects that you have in front of you. So that's the kind of the background presentation-wise in terms of lease-leaseback, why we want to move in that direction. The actual resolution is something that the board would have to pass tonight to be able to move forward on potentially utilizing this project delivery method.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, we'll come to the board. Questions on behalf of the board regarding this resolution? Mr. Quisenberry.
I just want to comment that we, in our special sessions, have gone over this in great detail. And so this is not news to the members of the board, but it is good information for the public. So, and thank you, Ryan.
And Mr. Buffen.
I was going to mention the same thing Jim did. Just want to clarify one thing. My understanding is under the new codes, under the new law, and allowing lease-leaseback, giving it new strength, there is a higher level or more demand for skilled labor, more journeymen, and more apprenticeships.
Yes, that's a requirement of the new.
Okay. Thanks.
If you're going to utilize that project delivery method, you have to have the skilled labor force tied into it.
Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Well, and to piggyback on that, my question was if you, Mr. Pinkerton, if you would just elaborate on what the skilled labor force requirement is under lease-leaseback.
Help me out, Mr. Holkman.
It's a requirement for training. So the unions offer apprenticeship programs for various trades. And then the General Contractor Association, and I can't recall the specific name, and it does the same thing. But fundamentally, it's asking that before you enter a trade, you go through a training program. So, and the requirement goes from 20 to 40 to 60 over the ensuing years, so that, the great hope is that we get a better trained workforce. So that's the impetus.
Okay, and we would, if we're not using union labor, if our contractors are under lease-leaseback, if the general contractor is not using, if any of the subcontractors or the general contractor are not using union labor, they will be paying prevailing wage.
Prevailing wage is applicable in any and all cases, period.
Okay.
So, yes, they would be.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Beckman? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr.
Hunter. So the one thing I'd just like to follow up on what Mr. Quisenberry said, the board does have monthly study sessions where we go through issues related to Measure D. Typically those are on, I believe, the third Thursday of every month, and they, as every meeting, they are open to the public.
Yes.
And at our study session this week, we wanted to make sure this was fully legally vetted, and that's why we had DWK present this information to us in great detail. Mr. Buffen.
And we did spend a lot of time talking about it. If there's no other comments, I'd like to move approval of resolution number 13-16-17.
And I'll second.
It's a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mrs. Roger. This is a resolution, and so this is a roll call vote.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is where our change in the order of business comes about. We are moving Mr. Bennett's presentation to come up next. Oh, sorry. Ah, okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, if you don't mind, Mr. Bennett, we are going to just go with the STEAM update.
These chairs are really hard back here, so I want to make sure our guests get through. A quick chronology of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant closure news. It happened this summer, as all of you know, in June. And from that came a whole series of immediate thinking and what are we going to do to address this pending issue. And so I want the board to know that that behind the scenes we put together a system to allow for public input, to educate our community and our staff, and as well as reaching out to experts in the field that have been involved in such things in other communities. And so beyond the public forums that we opened up this last fall, and in addition to the local leader group that we put together in November, while all that was going on, I reached out to what I consider to be the seminal expert in the field in terms of facilitation of this type of effort, and that's Ron Bennett. He is the CEO of California School Services of California, and he has a lengthy resume, but suffice it to say that we've had a relationship with his company for well over three decades. And we use them to help assist us with collective bargaining, to looking at our budget, to helping us with special education, and governance issues. And so Ron Bennett is known throughout the state as someone who is well known throughout basic aid community-funded school districts. In fact, he assists us. I happen to participate on the Schools for Sound Finance board, and Mr. Bennett helps run that particular effort, and that is to protect the interests of community-funded school districts like ourselves. So I reached out to Ron early last fall, and I asked him for his advice on how I should best proceed to make sure that we transition our community not just properly but extremely well, that we see this not as just a challenge but as an opportunity. And he, in many ways, set me straight. And so he is going to help us. He is going to help us with our Blue Ribbon Committee. Now, this Superintendent's Blue Ribbon Committee will begin this March once it's all put together. I asked him to come here tonight simply to frame out the reason behind the Blue Ribbon Committee. It's not just another committee. Rather, it's a committee representing our district community, not just educators, but community leaders, business leaders, and educators, people that are well-regarded and well-respected. And hopefully Mr. Bennett will explain, not just to you, but also to the public, the purpose behind this committee and what we intend to do about it. So, Mr. Bennett.
Well, thank you, Dr. Prater, and members of the board, and Madam President, members of the staff and public. I'm Ron Bennett. I'm the CEO of School Services of California. I've met most of you in various venues over the last 20 years or so. And tonight I'm here to talk with you about a significant change in your community and how other communities may have addressed those kinds of changes and what you might consider in terms of your own community. So when we look at community-funded schools, and by that we mean the 90 or so school districts in the state who are funded by local property taxes, by the local taxpayers. And those 90 districts are much less dependent on the state of California than the other 900 districts. But you're also much more dependent on your community. And so when you have an issue like Diablo Canyon, not only is it an employment issue for the community, it's a tax issue for you. And it's a tax issue that affects your ability to deliver services for students. So when you're a community-funded school, you get the property taxes, and you educate all the students that are there. And if the property taxes go up, you do better. If the property taxes go down, you do worse in terms of the amount of money that you have to educate students. And so from time to time, you get not a committee that's going to cut the budget for this year and help you to do that. We're all accustomed to those kinds of committees. Or somebody that's going to work on the LCAP, a three-year plan for student achievement. But sometimes you need to reach beyond that and say, we've had a significant shift in the outlook, not only for our school district, but for the community of which we are a part. And so when you have a situation like that, and I'll draw a parallel. Los Angeles Unified School District at one point had almost 700,000 students. Over a period, a very short period, they lost 150,000 students. So you go from 700, and they're a state-funded district, so they're getting paid based on the number of students. So you lose 150,000 students, half of them to charters, half of them out of the district, to other districts out of the area. And so there was a significant shift. That declining enrollment was taking most of their new money. At the same time, their costs were rising rapidly, and their district was cutting programs because they could not afford to keep them going. And so the superintendent asked us to come in and facilitate a group of people, including a former treasurer and attorney general for the state, a former state Senate pro tem, a former state superintendent, the CFO of the UC system, a variety of people who were statewide experts on their topics, but more than that, were willing to sit down and say, let's look at some of the program delivery. Let's look at the priorities of the school district. Let's give the superintendent a long look, not a one-year look, not a three-year look, but a much longer look at what this community is going to look like and what we can do to facilitate high-quality education in the environment that we envision we will have in the future. So when Dr. Prater asked me about, you know, we're going to have this significant shift in our community in terms of not only employment and taxes, but, you know, all of the other things that kind of go with the multiplier effect when a major employer cuts back like that. So, you know, fewer people buying groceries and fewer people at the gas station and those kinds of things. And that shift is a multi-year shift that takes a while for it to happen. So how could we get in front of that was the question. And so I suggested a methodology very much like we used in Los Angeles. Superintendent identified these people who had a specialized interest in the district. Most of them were not educators. We had two educators. We had a former county superintendent, and we had a former state superintendent. All of the others were business people. They were politicians. They were statewide leaders. And for LA Unified, that's what they wanted. For you, I think you'd want a more local group of people. But the idea is that everything is wide open for them. The reason you use a facilitator is so that at the start of the process, we brief them on how the school finance system works, particularly how it works for community-funded districts. We brief them on the local control accountability plan and how that affects the educational delivery in the school district. We go over budget items and programs, and we show them how the district is spending its money. We go over the priorities that the district has set, and we show them what the current priorities are. And then we basically step back and say, you have license to look at anything you would like to look at. And so if you want to hear about the special ed program, We will bring in someone who can speak to the special ed program. We'll provide documentation and handouts and things like that that will help you to learn about the special education program. You can learn about the costs. You can learn about the benefits. You can learn about what options the district has, what the trends are. And then you can consider whether or not to make recommendations. So I had this, what I called the nine-headed monster in L.A. We had nine people on the panel, and a good number, like 7 to 10, something like that. And I kept thinking all the way through, if I could get consensus on three recommendations, I'd be doing really well. But this committee took on a life of its own. They wanted to meet. They wanted to develop an expertise in the areas that they were going to advise the district. In the end, we had 42 recommendations, and we had consensus on all of them from that group. And so, so that takes some work to put enough facts in front of people that they can develop a position that they feel they can all recommend. And so I don't know that there are no guarantees that that result would happen. But the idea would be, again, to superimpose this view, this long look, over some of the things that are more immediate that you're dealing with now. So let me stop there and take questions.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, is there anyone at the board who would like to comment?
Hi, how are you, sir?
I am doing well, sir.
Good. So in looking at the difference between LA Unified and ourselves, it sounded like you had a great deal of diversity from in LA Unified from all over maybe the state or at least that community. And so we often have folks in our community, they're strong and they're vocal. And then we have a younger group of, I'm going to call them entrepreneurs that are coming. So how much diversity can you get into a seven-member committee? And is that what we're looking for, a lot of diversity?
So I have talked with the superintendent about making sure that we have a broadly diversified committee. I don't know your local people as well as you and the superintendent do. And so, but we would definitely want to have people from every cross-section. And if you have an entrepreneurial person on the committee who knows nothing about education, they ask lots of questions that help to inform people on the committee who think they know about education, right? And so so I like strong people. I like questioners. I like leaders in an industry. You know, leadership is a pretty transferable skill. People who do well in one industry as leaders develop a set of skills that allows them to lead in other activities that they do as well. I worked with the California School Boards Association for many years doing the Masters in Governance training, the new board member training, and so on. And board members who have been successful in their personal business lives and their whatever walk of life they're in tend to become really good leaders as board members as well. And so that kind of emerges in this kind of a group, and you're selecting for leadership. So you're going to get some egos in that room, and so it's important to be able to direct that in a positive way.
Mr. Millar.
Yes, is there a cost associated with CISC services for this job? Oh, school service.
Yes. What we're, in fact, Mr. Bennett and I were talking about this today. And so they're going to charge us on an hourly basis based on the numbers of meetings. We just don't know yet what
travel time.
Pardon?
Travel time.
I'm not sure. We haven't gone down that road yet. But what we're going to do is once the committee's established, I have six confirmations right now. I'm still seeking four more. And so once that committee forms, Mr. Bennett will contact them and see what the calendar looks like in terms of their availability, because it could be hit and miss.
It could be 3 meetings. It could be 5 meetings. And then once that's been established and confirmed, then we'll negotiate the rate.
So I was here on Friday, and I saw what the weather was on Friday. I was doing a training session at the county office, so I got to enjoy a full and rich experience here. But if you'll guarantee me it won't look like Friday so that I can fly my little airplane over here, then the travel cost is a tank of gas, right?
Well, you Air Force guys can fly in any kind of weather, as long as you have a long enough runway to live.
That's right. We need a long enough runway, and we need to be able to see it. If we have those two things, then we can have the same number of successful takeoffs and landings. That is a good characteristic.
Ron, I can't guarantee that, but I can guarantee there's a low cost in firewood.
Yes.
Right here. Thank you.
I would just like to ask you to comment on, we're not starting with a blank slate with this group of people because we've had public forums and we've had information that's come forward from those public forums. And so we've reached out, and many of you have probably attended some of those public forums, and from that we've come up with some core themes. And so we're sort of funneling that information to our Blue Ribbon Committee. Mm-hmm. And so we're not just starting over from scratch.
Right. I've become aware of all of the outreach efforts that you have, and if you think you have the basis covered, then, you know, if you feel good about that, then you're good, and you should move forward with that. You don't have to do every layer of outreach that there is, but this is going to be a significant event for you. You're going to go from being a community-funded district with a lot of excess revenue over what you get as a state-funded district to a community-funded district only a little bit above what you get from the state. And so that's going to change the outlook for what you can do long term. And so the other outreaches Dr. Prater and the board has engaged in, I think are more immediate. And we heard about the LCAP, and that's, you know, your 3-year plan. And I always have to follow students who are delivering excellent performances when I come to a board meeting. And I, the business guy, you know, following the students is not good. But at some point, you know, you've had enough input, and it's time to move on and implement some things. But if you're looking at that long-term look and you want to have a chance for other people to be stakeholders, I mean, one of the things that I look at is that in public education, we're really good at rounding up people and saying, come and help us solve our problem, and let me tell you what the problem is, and then you show us how to cut this budget. We never seem to be able to reach out and say, let's talk about what our community goals are. Let's talk about where we see this area developing. What is the difference in the role we would see for public education now as opposed to 10 years from now? And that's the kind of question that I try to get in front of this kind of a group of people. You can't do it very often. It's a big time commitment for them. And unlike school services, they are unpaid. And so they're putting in a lot of time on their own time. And in each case where we've done it, I used LA as an example, there have been others, but in each case where we've done it, it does become a passion for the people who are on that committee. If we pick the right people, it'll be their committee, and we want them to own it. And so after about the second meeting, I am working clearly for them all the rest of the way through, and I like it that way. So it's up to the board really to decide how much input you want.
Mr. Unger.
So it sounds like you're not talking about perhaps what we've done in the past when we've had committees in the past. For example, when in 2000, when we suffered the precipitous decline in our revenue, that would make specific targeted revenue cuts. For example, but it sounds like what you're talking about is a much larger picture. about our goals and our values and things like that. Is that what your intention is?
It is.
Kind of what you think about it will turn out.
So I was here in 2000, and I helped to try to get you through that period of time where we were looking at the big budget cuts. And that was, at that time, it was precipitous, but it was also, we viewed it as temporary. So we viewed it, if we get through this valley, then things will return to a more normal life for us. In this case, let's talk about what you do have. What you're going to have is you're going to have, for the long term, higher revenues than most districts in the state because you are a community-funded district. They won't be as high. You will be able to afford more priorities than some other districts, maybe not the ones that have all of the unduplicated counts, right? They're getting a lot more money than you are, than you will be getting. And so this is about goal setting and priorities for that longer term. And I think you've described it correctly, okay, that it's looking out there and saying, we can't afford all of our priorities, but what are the ones that we should value the most? And what do these community leaders believe we should be valuing the most for the long term?
Yeah, and the other thing I think it's, and I don't know if this is still true, but my understanding, at least in 2000, was part of the reason that we were a community-funded school district was because our ADA, our average daily attendance, which was how we were paid, was lower than other school districts in the county, which got us to that community-funded place more easily. Are we still in that place where we would be getting less than others? And I know he talks about unduplicated counts. What he's talking about there, the new state funding system gives extra money for schools that have high levels of English language learners, high levels of students with poverty, and high levels of students in foster care. And we're clearly not there with those numbers. So we don't get those targeted funds. But is that sort of a fair assumption that we're probably getting, that we're getting less than other school districts, other local school districts, of Shandon, for example? But yet, we'll still have more than what we would have were we funded per pupil.
So if the state were to do away with what we believe is our constitutional protection to keep the taxes here, to keep the property taxes, you would go from being above average as a basic aid district or community-funded district to last in the state in terms of the funding that you would get. You would be in the bottom 10% of funding in the state. And so most of the community-funded districts would be right down there with you because they don't have the unduplicated counts that some of the other districts around them have. So this it's very important. That's why I work hard with the Schools for Sound Finance, and we appreciate Dr. Prater being on the board. But we protect basic aid. And right. So we have somebody in the Capitol every day making sure that doesn't happen to you.
Right. I just for the public's understanding, Schools for Sound Finance is a group of community-funded school districts that works to make sure that we're able to maintain our local property taxes locally. The last question I have is, so there will be people that the public will want to give input into these long-term goals we've been talking about. What are some ways that the public can give input to this group of people who will ultimately hear from them through the superintendent?
So in Los Angeles, we gave the group the choice of whether they wanted to hear the public input directly or whether they wanted to make their recommendations to the board and then have the board hear the public input. And they elected, the committee elected to tell the superintendent that they wanted to make their recommendations to the superintendent. When the superintendent made those recommendations to the board, have the public input come directly to the board. And the reasoning was that we could have public input about things we're not even going to talk about. And we could, if we try to do an outreach in a community with millions of people, we could be here forever and never get to what we think is the heart of the matter. And so their thinking was, and it was a decision we talked about, their thinking was, we should develop our recommendations as experts in our fields, as community activists for the Los Angeles Unified School District, and then pass them through the school, through the superintendent to the school board. Then the school board can talk about what they want to do with those recommendations, and that's where the public input on each of those recommendations would be. So what Los Angeles did is they grouped them into four groups of recommendations and things that affected the central office, things that affected the schools, and so on. And then they agendized them, and they had people come in and make comments about specific items that the committee had recommended. So the committee recommended that they get rid of their lifetime benefits commitment, and there were quite a number of people who came in and spoke to that, none of them favorably, and I don't think the district will tackle that one, but that was one that the committee said, you know, it's a big cost. Not most districts don't have that cost. Most districts don't guarantee lifetime benefits, so you should try to negotiate that out. And the employee associations had very strong feelings about that, none of them positive. So I don't know that the district will do that, but I cite it as an example.
Yeah, I just think it's important that we present to the public the knowledge that they will have input into this process.
Yes, and by the way, we did have the panel at the meetings where the public was there to hear them make the recommendations. The recommendations came from the panel members themselves.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Just maybe following up a little of what Chris said, but clarification as to how these meetings work. This is the title, it's my understanding, is the Superintendent's Blue Ribbon Committee. It's not the board's committee. So these will be meetings with that committee, with the Blue Ribbon Committee that is established by Dr. Prater, for him to have an opportunity to seek information, to seek the combined collective knowledge of the leadership and community leaders on that committee. These will not be part of any regular board meeting. Perhaps there may be a reporter, perhaps not. That will be up to Dr. Prater. So I just wanted to be clear that unlike, say, our Measure D meetings, which are board meetings, that this will be a separate sort of group and entity that will not be made up of members of the board. They will not be subject to the same sorts of guidelines and laws that we fall under as a board. So I just wanted to be clear on that the public will not necessarily be attending these meetings. They are of this select group of people, but we will certainly be privy to at some point what they have to say and what their thoughts are and what their suggestions are with regard to the district as a whole.
So that's exactly correct. And the way that you've stated it is correct. The superintendent, I'll go back to Los Angeles again. The superintendent came to the first meeting, and he basically said, I want you to look at whatever you think you need to look at. I will see you at the last meeting. And then he left. And so John Gray from our company and I facilitated the rest of the meetings, and we had a liaison on the staff so that we could agendize items and we could have the right people there with the right information ready to present to the panel at the right times. But it's basically the panel's work, and that's why I said after the first after the second meeting, clearly the panel was driving the agenda, and I was supplying information for them to develop these recommendations.
Thank you.
Just a point of clarification maybe for Dr. Prater. What you're seeing on the screen up here, for those of you who are here or watching on television, these are the core themes that came out of the public forum comments and also the local leader groups. And so just so that we're all on the understanding that we have looked for that input and we are using that information and passing it along then to the Blue Ribbon Committee to consider.
Yeah. These core themes that you see up on there, they reflect the three-month outreach between last fall, between the public forums that we held, our staff feedback sessions that we held, and the local leader group. These six core themes will be provided to the Blue Ribbon Committee. I will sit down with Ron Bennett and John Gray to share this with them in greater detail and say, here's a framework for you to work within. And these frameworks are the things you might expect, the things that we heard in our public outreach. When the Blue Ribbon Committee is completed, when their task is completed, the intention is this summer I will share these things with the board, get your feedback. Then my intention is to go back out next fall to the public and get their feedback once again on these more refined considerations. The Blue Ribbon Committee's different than the local leader group or the public forum in that their task is to, these are, so far, the people that have agreed to be on there are quite wise and brilliant in their own ways. So, and I've tried really hard to get that cross section, and so they, when I do announce their names, I don't want to do it tonight because we're not done yet. But you'll understand that these are folks that are committed to our communities, and committed to our school district in different ways. And I think they'll add something else, something very unique. They'll be able to roll up their sleeves and really get down to it. And I think when I come back out in the fall to share that with the community to get their feedback again, people will see that effort and that thoughtfulness, which will then lead to my eventual multi-year recommendation, that long view, in January 2018.
And this appears on our website, correct?
It does.
So if you're having difficulty reading that,
yes,
you can absolutely look through that. And then there's another page below that, which is additional comments from principals as well, and executive statements. So thank you. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
So we have Mr. Stewart, who is raising his hand.
Well, I guess we want to ask the board how they want to handle that, because typically we offer an opportunity to ask questions beforehand and then go to the board for discussion. So
did we ask before the
We sure did. Yeah.
I didn't know the concept of the presentation.
Okay. Is it possible for you to contact Dr. Prater directly and ask him those questions?
Absolutely possible.
Yeah. Would that be acceptable? Would that be acceptable to the board that anybody having questions right now should direct those questions to Dr. Prater?
It would be good to consider another or just a question. I don't want to break the rules, but I do want like, to be a part of
this. Really,
I think Superintendent's Blue Ribbon Committee, the way this item was presented, it really is very nebulous. I mean, if I didn't know, I wouldn't know what to anticipate was going to be discussed under that heading. So I don't object to having Mr. Stewart speak myself.
I don't object.
And I concur with Mrs. Okay. Roger.
Great. Come on up.
Okay.
3 minutes.
Hi, again, Craig Stewart, president of the SLCTA, and my question is simply, and this is a new idea to me, and the whole process, you know, is you know, we're looking forward. My question is, and this is for you too, Mr. Bennett, as a union representative, I would assume that it would be a value, and we're talking about experts in the field and you know, leaders, and you have actually here in our community a group of leaders and experts in the field, they're the teachers, and we have an organization that would love to be a part of looking at the future of our district and trying to make good plans for the future, and we have some very, very strong minds in our group, and I'm just wondering, I had heard no mention of inclusion of teachers in this Blue Ribbon process as it's been carried out in LA or anywhere else. And I'm wondering why not, and if the protocol doesn't call for that in this particular case, what kind of input would you be seeking, perhaps if there's not a member on the Blue Ribbon panel from the Teachers Association? How could the Teachers Association become a part of this planning process? So we're not playing catch-up when it comes up in front of you guys. It's kind of the way I felt like I was playing catch-up in my seat just now, like, oh, this is what we're talking about. And like, how do I get into this conversation, which is what I really want to be a part of. And I also would assume that after you've had the Blue Ribbon panel discussions and recommendations, and you have a bunch of brilliant minds, but perhaps not brilliant in the field of education, brilliant in lots of ways. And of course, our leadership here in the district is full of former educators and current people who are very skilled in this area, but we also have some people who are actually on the ground right now dealing with issues in our district as they're happening. And I would assume that the public would probably want to see that that interaction had taken place as well. When you come to the board with what the Blue Ribbon panel comes up with, I would assume a question would come up. I would hope a question would come up. Did you talk to the teachers? Like, what do they think about your thing? And then the teachers would then flood the mic saying, after the fact, oh, but what about this and this and this? But instead of that, perhaps including the teachers in the process and their expertise and their passion for this subject would be an advantage to your commission and to the plan in general. That's my thought. And it, embedded in that thought is a question about why teachers aren't typically included, which is what I'm gathering from Mr. Bennett's presentation in other areas. So is that something you could address?
I can do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Can I address that?
Yes, please.
So, in my effort to present this briefly and stay with the kind of the main line of what the panel did, I'll go back to Los Angeles again. So, when we got to the items of compensation, of staffing, of benefits, those kinds of things, the committee said we would like to hear what the employee organizations have to say. So, we scheduled a meeting. And we had the employee organizations come in and talk to the committee. We did not have any board members or employee organizations on the committee or other stakeholders within the school district. But the committee itself said, we need to hear what the employee organizations have to say. Now, they have more than 20 employee organizations in Los Angeles Unified, and they were all given an opportunity to come and speak. We set aside time for them to come and speak. The teachers came, the larger classified associations came, the building trades did not come, but a lot of the others did come, and they came at a time when the panel had done enough work to know what areas they wanted to ask the employee associations about. And so so then they did have input that way. And then after the report was written, presented to the superintendent, presented to the board, then the employee organizations again had an opportunity to respond. The fact that you have a report does not in any way take away the association's right to negotiate. So if we put something in a report and comes from a community member, like get rid of the lifetime benefits, well, a community member may think that's just a great idea, but it doesn't absolve the district of its obligation to negotiate that item. And I, as I told the committee, there will be peace in the Middle East before this association gives up that benefit. Okay, and so so the expectation that everything in the report is going to be implemented is not what we try to create. What we try to create is if you're looking at a view of financial stability or you're looking at a view of educational delivery or whatever, that the committee looks at that with a different set of eyes so that we don't have so many insiders involved that we end up with a kind of a groupthink of these other groups. And so when they felt it was time, they brought in the associations, but we didn't put them on the committee. And certainly every process can be different, but I'm trying to describe one that seemed to be successful.
Okay? Thank you, Mr. Bennett. That's very helpful in clarifying this.
You need to step up to the microphone and identify yourself, please.
Please.
That was our intent. Well, you know, we open it up.
You know, I have to say that I find this a whole lot more productive than being asked to give public input before we have all the information. There was a lot of information that was presented when the board had a discussion, things that we didn't know before. And so you can actually get better input from your public if you have the board discussion and then open it up to public comment. So that's just one comment I have. I'm a little concerned that the entire makeup of the committee is being put together by one individual. And I guess it comes from the sense that, I mean, we all have our groups that we move in. And having come from the coast, and I work with a lot of very low-income kids and that population, you know, every single school in Los Osos Mora Bay would qualify as Title I, every single one. So all of our Title I schools go into a school that could be a Title I, and then they go into the high school, which could be a Title I also, if we funded the secondaries at Title I. But so there's a very, and we're separated by about a 10-mile distance. And so some of the concerns that happen in this part of the school district, it's like a whole different part of a school district. And I just want to make sure that the kinds of people that have those concerns in mind are also included. You know, they understand what it means that we can't get college students out here to come volunteer for an hour or two in our classrooms in the way that a lot of the schools in San Luis can, because they're right there. You know, there's all these little things. There's, you know, these different kinds of industries in San Luis that can come and do presentations, or it's a quick field trip. You know, that doesn't happen in Los Osos. We're a bedroom community, and we're actually a pretty poor bedroom community. At least the school population is a poor bedroom community, and the rest are retired. So it's a very different community, and I'd like to make sure that that kind of input is included in the committee members, so that they have that sense that they're not just coming from a, you know, fairly upper middle class sense when they're looking at this. So that's just my one concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, you know, we opened it up to one person. We need to open it up to everybody at this point.
Hi, my name is Katie Bravante. I teach elementary music in San Luis Coastal. And I wanted to just make two quick points on this topic. One is, when you're selecting the Blue Ribbon community members, that the diversity that you were talking about sounded more career-oriented. Then I'm just wondering about race and gender also, that they match our demographics. And two, to reiterate what Craig said, it's, I think, very valuable to have someone that is teaching right now. It's really easy to lose perspective, and I'm reminded of this every summer when I step away from my classroom and I start thinking about all my different units that I want to develop, and then I start teaching in August, and I, oh, wait a second, that doesn't work, because I forget immediately how much they can accomplish in one lesson, and I have to scaffold and step back. And I think that perspective, and not just in the curriculum design, but in all of teaching, the further away, the longer away you are away from the classroom, the harder it is for you to understand what really goes on at the center of what we're talking about. So I think having someone that's teaching right now on that committee and through the process, not just being asked at the beginning and the end of the process, but through the process, being right in there to help with this process would be really valuable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Hi, I'm Fatima. I work at Morro Bay High School. And I actually just had a question, because of the examples that you gave, very often it was personnel reduction, and that's how you would plan for cutting costs. maybe of what some other examples were? Because I'm sitting in my seat kind of nervous about that sort of statement or those sorts of examples. If you had some other just to kind of calm our nerves.
Sure. Sure. So we had 42 recommendations in Los Angeles, and the biggest district in the state. It wasn't necessarily personnel reductions. It was the way that we used people in order to serve students. And so one of the reductions that the committee recommended was they have an old, outdated warehouse that sells things to schools at a price higher than you could purchase it in the store yourself. And so one of the recommendations was you go to a more modern on-time delivery, real-time delivery system for schools. And amazingly, a lot of districts have that, but Los Angeles didn't. And you have supplies and things delivered directly to schools by the private sector and significantly reduce or get rid of the warehouse. Now, you know, that's something that could be done. They looked at the location of schools and which of these schools are we putting programs in terms of where is the population that we're drawing from for that program. And the district's decisions on where to put programs had put a lot of students on the bus. Well, if you take some students off the bus, have them in their home school. There are not only savings, but there are safety issues. Parents, you know, would rather have their kids closer. Those kinds of things as well. So the recommendations. And by the way, if you go to the Los Angeles Unified School District website, the entire report is posted on their website, and you can see all of the different recommendations that the committee made. So I've tried to summarize a few tonight, but. But it was very far-reaching. It had to do with, in the special education area, ways to save money while rendering a high-value service. One of the recommendations was that under the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Act of 1975, the feds agreed to put up a certain amount of money. They never have. Go after the feds, see if you can get them to put up the money. Those kinds of recommendations were in there as well. So it wasn't all cut-oriented. It was, a lot of it was oriented toward, if the charter schools are taking our kids, why can't we offer the same programs they do and get our kids back? Or retain the kids that we still have. And so if you're losing 75,000 kids to charters, that's an area you need to look at. So there are recommendations like that in there as well. But I didn't choose to use your time to go through the whole LA report. But I hope some of the samples help. And it is on their website.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bennett. Safe travels on your way back. And
I just wanted... When we're talking about special education, I wanted to let everybody know, Mr., that school services is a leader in California in working with the federal government, working with local school districts to try to get adequate funding, the 40% that we've been promised from the federal government. And we've been doing that for the Coalition for Adequate Special Education Funding, which is spearheaded by school services, and we thank you for that.
Well, thank you for that. We've been operating that coalition for 25 years, and it's done a lot of good work, so we appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And just to clarify, the reason we ask for public comment before we go to the board's discussion is because your comments inform our discussion. And so that's the reason for that. Tonight, we made an exception, and so we made an exception for everyone. But that is the actual reason, is that actually is very helpful to us to hear from you before we have our own conversation among ourselves. We are out of order right now, so we are we switched around. Let me just find where we are. We're back to the STEAM update now, item number 9.01, and that is Mr. Illig and Mr. Shorben.
Good evening. I'm Tristan Shorba. I'm the science teacher on special assignment, and I know you know Mr. Andre Illig, principal at Los Osos Middle School. We're here to share a little bit about what students are doing. And specifically regarding focus area 3, regarding STEAM. And so part of this goal here is all about San Luis Coastal providing our students access to a world-class STEAM program. And to clarify what STEAM is really quickly, STEAM is the integration of the disciplines of science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math, but it goes beyond that. It goes into students learning through inquiry. It's about student problem solving. It's about learning and education in the 21st century. It's about putting their knowledge and skills into practice. And so STEAM at our elementary sites takes a number of different forms depending on the school site and the grade level. It could look like in terms of after school or during the school day clubs, as well as STEAM rotations or even electives that students take. An example of one of the clubs that students participate in is called BizKids. This is where students learn about entrepreneurship and business skills. They develop a business plan and come up with a creative product or a service that they then may need to prototype, design, test, redesign, and even try to do a little sales pitch. Another example is a number of our students at a number of our sites are engaged in robotics clubs and classes, where students learn about circuitry, programming, definitely teamwork and creative problem solving. Some of our students are even able to take the robots they build and actually have gone to competitions and compete with against other students and other school teams. Some of our students are using STEAM and integration to solve problems at their local school site. This school site was having a problem with a gate that wasn't closing properly. And so the students were presented with a problem and used Tinkercad software as well as 3D printing and the engineering design process to develop and test and refine a device that they were able to print on campus to solve their site problem. Other examples of what our elementary students are doing is our Junior Engineers Club, where students are learning all about engineering and the design process and circuitry. Our students are also using Bloxels to design video games, and a number of our students are learning computer coding through Hour of Code and other programming sites. Our students are also engaging in a variety of engineering design challenges. Design challenges where students are given opportunities as teams to kind of meet or exceed a challenge. They're given certain criteria for success as well as constraints. A lot of times it has to do with time or materials constraints. And then and they're set loose. This teaches students creative problem solving as well as collaboration. Again, the engineering design process of coming up with a plan, trying it and testing it and redesigning and refining it, be that the tallest tower or the longest bridge or the strongest bridge or that really cool balloon rocket that little guy has there in the middle. Our students are learning how to problem solve and overcome challenges together. We're also embedding the arts in our STEAM opportunities at our elementary schools, where students are using technology to tell stories and use their flair for the dramatic to act, as well as create book trailers. If you haven't checked out that Tarantulas versus Spiders book trailer, link in there. I encourage you to check it out. You'll probably want to read the book after. And then applying their art lessons in terms of learning about architectural design and blueprinting as well. We're also able to bring STEAM home to our families through outreach in terms of doing family math and engineering nights. And our elementary schools, all of them will have either implemented or will have implemented one of these nights by the end of this school year. These are very engaging nights where our families really get to learn about math and engineering and really not just the what behind these disciplines, but the so what. And these are a lot of very engaging activities where our parents and our students really get to learn together as a family unit and kind of get to play around. And this is really great because it extends the STEAM conversation beyond the school walls and takes it to the kitchen table, where it educates our parents to have these conversations with their students about what is engineering, what does this mean, what are you learning in math, and why does it matter? And again, very engaging and very exciting nights for our families. We've also been able to have Cal Poly faculty and students come in and share their expertise at these nights, as well as just providing really engaging activities and just kind of that mentoring relationship as well. And of course, our instructional services department providing a lot of the materials, logistics, and planning support. So we have a variety of opportunities and programs at our elementary school sites that provide a nice foundation by which our students can now enter into our secondary schools world, where those foundations will be continually built upon.
Good evening, everybody. So thank you for coming to our CSBA board presentation, where you heard a whole hour of Loam's STEAM. So tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about the other school's STEAM programs. I was nominated / volunteer to represent all the other schools as well, so they're taking bets or making money by me being here and them not having to present. So one slide each, but I snuck in two for Loam's. So Pacific Beach High School update from Andy Marinello, where they're really looking at STEAM being inquiry, dialogue, critical thinking, and project-based. And so they have a few examples there of their yearbook class. They have a farm area where they work on vegetables, guest artist program, which I believe we heard a little bit about with the Teach Foundation grants, the skateboard class. So they're really just there making STEAM alive and integrating it in their curriculum. For Morro Bay High School, which has wonderful students that were trained at Loam's, they're working on cross-curricular projects, applied learning, robotics and engineering. There's underwater robotics. If you look at this photo sort of on the bottom there's the underwater robotics class as well as Skills USA. Something interesting appeared through here, and you'll see sort of a theme through all of these slides, is that as we look at the pictures, some of these pictures are actually in the science class. So it's not necessarily just in STEAM class or in elective classes, but it's also just a sort of a mesh between, you know, like the biology class and or the chemistry or the physics class, and then also the elective classes. So STEAM has become, because it's been around for a while now with the board initiatives, STEAM has become embedded within, you know, multiple curricular areas. At San Luis Obispo High School, you can see a couple examples right there. This is sort of even more science class-based here. They're designing and building and testing the strength of bridges, soil health with worms, strawberry DNA extraction, permeability of plastics, stuff like that. So just STEAM is in action in all the classrooms. At Laguna Middle School, yes, they still have a sewing machine. Sorry, we do not have sewing machines anymore here. They have technical electives. They've also started their makerspace. They have a club with Minecraft. Also part of STEAM is the letter A, right, for arts. And so we have at Laguna Middle School, they have art, band, choir, and theater, and then also engineering and computers that are all built in. For Los Osos Middle School, I planted a few Easter eggs in my presentation, so at a later time, if you want to click on the things that look odd, you can get a little extra marketing here for our school. We've expanded our elective courses with engineering design. You can see over on the right, there's two of our digital 3D printers at work. That buzzing sound that's been bothering you all night is our students put 3D printers together. They had to build the printer, program it, and it's busy making a something over there. You can go and have a look. We have aerospace engineering here, computer science, coding, as you know, band, choir, and art. An integrated 6th through 8th grade model. I'm not going to go into too much detail. You heard all about it at the CSBA presentation. And then the biggest thing that really has become key for us is the integration of STEAM into all our core areas. And then, of course, opportunities for all students. As I said, I get two slides because I'm part of this presentation. So a big thing for STEAM for us has become the partnerships that we have outside of just our school. One of those would be through performing arts and drama. We have been able to take our drama program to the elementary schools to be able to present over there. Our robotics just qualified, I believe, last week to compete at the state level. So they're going to be competing in the beginning of March at state. We actually have two teams that qualified. Very excited about that. Another thing that you can see on that picture where you just see like a lot of people, that is our Science Fair 2.0. I want to spend just 30 seconds on our Science Project 2.0. Science Project has really become this transformational item in our 7th and 8th grade science classes. And what's happening is these kids have a very rigorous rubric. It's not the science fair that I had to do when I was in middle school. Extremely rigorous rubric with multiple categories that they compete. It has a whole writing component. It has a research component. It takes the kids about 14 to 16 weeks to do. The parents and the audience will know because they're involved. And then it gets vetted through our English classes in terms of the writing component, so that the kids are writing a proper essay-type report with citations about what their discovery is or what their categories are. And then it's vetted through an authentic audience. We have a couple engineers from the community as well as scientists that will come in, and they'll actually interview the kids and then score their projects. And so it's really been this mesh of like STEAM in action with through science, as well as our English class and, of course, our math classes. So community collaboration, we have our California Native Plants initiatives with our greenhouse in the back. There's a little picture on the right. We just started this semester with a solar vehicle project partnership with Prove Lab with Cal Poly. Cal Poly is trying to build the world's fastest moving solar vehicle that they're going to test in the Mojave Desert. Part of their grant for what they have to do, they have to have three middle schools, and we were chosen as one of the three middle schools. So Mr. Wilcox is working with about 25 of our kids to do small type solar vehicles, and we're pushing the boundaries because we're definitely going to outperform the other two middle schools. sorry, I'm a little competitive here. The other part that's been really exciting is the development of our community makerspace. And then the two areas that just really sort of focus out is our Tough 2 and our Area 55 events, which is also really STEAM at action. The whole school is involved in Area 55. You're all probably aware of that. And then recently our Tough 2, which is that two-mile obstacle run. Each advisory class builds an obstacle and has specific physics and calculations and building that they have to put into action. So really, STEAM in action at Loams. And back to Mr. Shorba.
So STEAM in San Luis Coastal looks different at different school sites, at different grade levels, but all of our school sites have established opportunities for all of our students to engage in STEAM learning and education. These opportunities extend and expand student learning beyond what they would receive in the regular core classrooms and core curriculum. And these skills and knowledge and learning that these students are getting through STEAM will further equip them for success in the 21st century. Be that if our students experience failure, that they learn not to give up, that failure is not defeat, but an opportunity to learn and to grow and to try again and refine and improve, or to accelerate success and to take pride in our achievements and take joy in that moment, but to also know that there will be future challenges and future problems for them to solve and to conquer, so that whatever the 21st century holds for our students, we know they'll succeed. Thank you.
Excellent. And we have one request to speak. That would be Mr. Wilcox.
Thank you. Appreciate it. First thing I want to ask is, why STEAM? Those of you who don't know me, I teach dead people, about dead people, I should say. Well, sometimes I wonder. But actually, I teach history along with many other things. Now, the point of thinking about the diversity in our community and the variety of students and all of the huge difference, different types of curricula that are taught, I began to look at the past, naturally, teaching history. I think back to the 1890s, about three people. One by the name of, Orville, and Wilbur, and Henry. And those folks happened to be innovators, creators. Those are the folks that developed and made a huge impact on our transportation, even today. So you have folks that started off in the area of, all three of them were involved with bicycles. I mean, there was the high-tech thing for the 1890s. How do you get to work faster? I'm going to take a bicycle. That's the way to go. And so from that diversity of thought, from that thinking about, oh, my gosh, going from that to something that flies or something that goes down the road with an internal combustion engine, those are things that are products of our public education system, the diversity that exists here at our school system. And so when you look at that and you think about all the variety of things that we just got through hearing about in the STEAM program, PROVE, that's the prototyping vehicle. That notion came to mind real quick when I heard about the opportunity that Mr. Illig pointed out. And that was that you have Cal Poly students that are in engineering coming to a school, serving as role models for our students, and at the same time, we visited their professor. He was brought in specifically from Scotland, a guy by the name of Graham Duig, and his specialty is, guess what, solar-powered vehicles. And so America Honda, naturally thinking about their own interests in vehicles, they funded a grant for everybody to get involved in this, and so it's an opportunity for our students to be at the forefront of STEAM. And so you look at history and you look at the past and how folks have been able to make an impact on change, and the same thing's happening right here. I was kind of hoping that one of my students, in fact, he made that 3D printer over there, and that he'd make it, but he's got baseball practice amongst other things that he's involved with. He's got a 4.0 GPA, and so he's a diverse kind of person. But Matthew basically has been mentored by somebody else that's not here but was shortly, and that's Brian Weber. And I want to thank him for that partnership. And I can tell you, seeing those two, I mean, if you were to see that, it's amazing. That Matt spends every waking hour, I think. I mean, he's trying to get in at nutrition time where this is located. He is coming in during passing periods. Oh, did it print out? You know, and so they're problem solving. And they're going to be presenting for the math department, both of them, and in-service training the teachers in the math department so that they can teach their students about 3D printing. Those things like X, Y, and Z coordinates, about infill, about all those things, the percentages that are necessary to create objects of the future today. And that's where I am at right now. I mean, I've gone from dittos to digital, and I'm running out of time. I can see that right now. And so I just want to thank you and point out that all of you, thank you very much for this opportunity to explore in the area of STEAM. And I'm dealing with live folks, not dead ones right now. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Well, and I would just like to point out, as being the parent of a recipient of your teaching, we could talk about the Civil War. We could start talking about it there. We could talk about the things that you were doing, sort of the precursors to this in the early 2000s when my son was at school, when it was Pong, you know, and things like that you were doing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Thank you for your efforts and all the work you've done for the school district and its children.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mr. Wilcox.
Is there anyone else from the public that would like to address us?
Well, I'm really excited about science, and I'm excited that the school is really putting an emphasis on that, and I hope that really continues to put an emphasis way down into the elementary grades. I'm also interested in making sure that girls have role models in science. My brother's wife is chair of the department, the geophysics department at UC Davis, and she has been very concerned about the number of women that come into the hard sciences. And so, you know, I know Cal Poly Engineering has a pretty good set of women that are in their engineering department. Helene Finger was one that I worked with when I was at Pacheco. And so I'm curious as to how many of the elementary schools in Los Osos and Morro Bay have had that opportunity to have Cal Poly students, women students, students of different genders, of different races, of, you know, the Hispanics, that have them coming out and can also mentor them, because it's not just doing the robotics, but it's seeing what the possibilities of your life can be. And so I guess this is a question to you, and perhaps, or yeah, as to whether that's also happening, and that kind of mentoring is happening at the Los Osos Morro Bay elementary schools. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Dehouser.
Yeah, unfortunately, you came a little bit late. I think you missed the student presentation from Morro Bay High School, and she spoke to us about the women's engineering program that just did a program for 100 girls, live streamed throughout California, and with people from Templeton coming down at Morro Bay High School for women who were interested in the engineering fields, and we were very excited to hear that.
So in terms of women and science, just a couple examples are PROVE Lab Solar Engineering, solar car thing. From Cal Poly, it was actually five women that came, no males. It was wonderful to see. And so one was, two of them were engineering, third year engineering students. One was a material science student. One was a chemistry student. And the other one was also in the mix. I don't remember exactly, but they were all women that came. So that was really exciting for us to be able to forge that partnership, because we wanted to make sure that there's the, you know, female role models in science. Additionally, at Los Osos Middle School, we have really expanded the Tech Trek, which is the American Association of University Women, that sponsors for seventh grade females to spend a week at the University of California. I think it was in Irvine. Every year, and so that they'll apply here from our school, and they'll be able to participate in that for women to be in the hard sciences, being a chemistry person myself. So really excited about that, and they were also involved in our Science 2.0, the American Association of University Women, to encourage females to participate in STEAM and science.
Thank you, Mr. Illig. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item?
I can talk really quickly about elementary, though I can't comment about what every school site's doing. I know specifically with the Family Math and Engineering Nights, I know Del Mar had a really nice Cal Poly presence, again, faculty as well as undergrad students in terms of science. I know also in terms of just our general science implementation that we're working on, they'll present more on next month. I'm in constant contact in developing our relationships with Cal Poly students and professors. And I know as we're going to be getting more and more science back into elementary, that will be continued in developing that relationship at those grade levels.
It's easy to see why you have so many fans.
It was interesting in the presentation that all but one was a female, even in the slide. So the Family Math and Engineering Nights at the elementary school, so that was good to see.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton, for pointing that out. Are there any other comments from the public?
Every month I travel around with our parent leader groups, and we go around the table and we hear from each of the schools. And I think one of the things that stands out to me, especially with our elementary schools here on the coast, is Baywood in particular stands out. And if Ms. Donnelly was here, she would be right at the mic, I'm sure, talking about their STEAM electives that they've organized. But it's not necessarily the staff, it's the parents. The parents, who are typically Cal Poly science and engineers, the parents have organized an after-school electives program that actually begins before school gets out. So I believe it's twice a month, they have electives that that are specifically aimed around STEAM and robotics, engineering. And I don't have the particulars, but I do know that in sitting in those parent meetings, there's tremendous energy coming from the parents around these opportunities. I know Del Mar has their own version of that, and Monarch, I believe, is trying to develop that, but I'm not sure where they're at. But I do know it's coming from the elementaries across the district, but in particular, Baywood seems to have a lot of energy when it comes to that right now.
Thank you. And I mentioned that Sinsheimer had that fantastic engineering night last month, too. That was really well done. Is there any other comment from the board? Any discussion we would like to follow up on? Okay, thank you very much. And now we're moving on to 9.02, Dr. Prater.
During our last board meeting, my staff and I presented a fairly lengthy presentation on the 2017-2018 budget reduction recommendations. These recommendations, as I said last time, do not bring me joy in any way, shape, or form. In fact, we've engineered our staffing and our structures to support student achievement at all levels. However, these reductions, to our best efforts, have been designed to begin those reductions at the district office level, as well as district subsidized programs, if you will. And these reductions that you see before you represent over $2 million of reductions that, despite our efforts, our best efforts to try to keep these reductions furthest away from the classrooms as possible, make no mistake, they will have an impact. But I made no adjustments nor changes based on my recommendations from last time and based on the feedback from the board. So I have before you tonight a $2 million reduction for the 2017-2018 school year. And the reason for this reduction has everything to do with the announcement of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant closure. While that reduction, or while that closure does not immediately impact us until the closure does not occur until 2024-2025, we know that the sooner we begin these reductions, the less impactful it will be on the district as a whole. And while these are not perfect recommendations, they will start in motion the reductions necessary to minimize and mitigate the harm in the out years. So I have before you these recommendations for next year.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Ms. Neuhauser.
You know, it's more of a question of clarification. There's a whole budget process yet to go through, right? That's adopted in final adoption in June. So how does this fit into that? Are these automatically going into the budget that will be adopted? By adopting this tonight, you're committing yourself to these particular reductions? Or is this a recommendation so that when the budget is worked on, they're put into that with a fair amount of confidence that the board will accept them? I guess I don't quite understand how this differs from the budget itself. Am I being clear?
Thank you.
Dr. Prater has a response.
That's actually a great insight. Yeah, what these reductions, these proposed reductions allow us to do from the district level is notify employees that are impacted by these things, allow staff that is impacted to land on their feet. And so we're coming before you now knowing full and well that there's a whole entire budgetary process that has to do with our local control accountability plan, where those goals are designed and developed with feedback from the staff and the community. We're doing those outreach efforts now. We also have something called the May revision. So the governor came out with the proposed budget for California, which impacts us not directly because we're a community-funded district, but indirectly because some of those revenues come directly to us. And so we don't call them categoricals, but they're effectively categoricals. So when the May revision comes out, that will influence that budget proposal that comes before you as a part of the local control accountability plan. The law was passed that the board has to approve the local control accountability plan and the budget simultaneously. And so so yes, the point made is accurate. We still have much to do in the coming months, but in fairness to those that these impact, the people and the programs that this impacts, I wanted to get these before you so I have confidence to move forward with the necessary transitions. Those transitions have to do with placement of staff and planning for the impacts that this has on other employees throughout the district. So yes, these allow us to make. You'll see these reductions in the ultimate budget in June, and that's why I'm coming to you now. So that you give me the direction that yes, these reductions will allow us to make the necessary future accommodations in the out year in 17-18.
We did. This is the second reading of this proposal, and we did hear public comment on this proposal at our last meeting as well.
If there's anybody else who'd like
is there anyone else from the public who would like to speak to that?
How about
Oh, yes, thank you, Dr. Prater.
My question is also just to kind of clarify, because I was looking at the numbers.
Could you state your name again?
Fatima Saleh from Morro Bay High. The MBHS instructional aid position, is that our last EL aid position that would be, because we do have someone retiring from that, if it is specific to that, as I guess the clarification that I'm looking for, because it is our last EL aid at Morro Bay High? Is it not specified?
No, this is not the, EL position
okay.
at Morro Bay High.
Okay, I know we went from 2 to 1, so I was just...
No.
Okay,
nope.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to address?
I'm not planning on saying anything, but
Could you
state your name, please?
Lene Coyner.
Thanks.
Apex right now, Morro Bay High School. I consider it a tremendous gift to have been given the person that we're talking about here, the instructional aide this year. Fantastic to get to know her and what she does with the kids. It's just, this has been the best teaching year of my life. And my question kind of is, so her position goes away, but she's not going away because then it hits somebody else and it rolls down. So how is this really a cut? And how is that money come around? Does that make sense there? Because this dollar amount, and then also my question would be about the two library aides. So can that be kind of clarified, or is that too specific for... Will we lose one at Morro Bay?
No, there won't be any loss at site levels for library techs. This was part of the IMC at yeah. at the district level.
But then doesn't those people go somewhere? Don't they trickle down?
Yeah, so you're really talking about people, and, right. and I'm talking about positions. So there are job rights that people have. So this instructional aid position at Morro Bay, that person... has job rights, and how that works is we're not going to have that instructional aid position at Morro Bay High, but that being said, the person has job rights to another position in the district based on the number of hours they have in that current position. That's why later on you'll see that there will be some classified position reductions in the district reflecting these reductions. Does that make sense? And I know it's hard when you're working with individual people,
but
these are about positions.
I understand, but then when I start thinking about it, I'm like, mathematically, this doesn't follow through in my head, but then it does on another.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It is tricky.
So, and I'll add, if I can, to two things. One, one of the main reasons for having it now is we have some statutory deadlines in terms of personnel that need to happen very soon that Mrs. Newland's going to be bringing forward. We negotiate all the impacts of layoffs. So, make no mistake, these are mostly personnel reductions. So, they will affect people. And so, I think... for us to let them know as early as possible is the best thing we can do, especially for people that have to go out and look for other jobs. So doing this early is a critical thing for us. But the statutory deadlines are one. And again, there are bumping. In terms of layoffs, there's potential bumping. So could somebody potentially lose their job that's currently at a site? Maybe. There's a whole process that we'll go through, and Mrs. Newland has to work directly with the unions on how that procedures and how they lay out.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Is there anyone else from the public that wanted to speak to this item? Seeing no one, we'll go to the board. Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I want to commend our administrative team on this because I think they've worked a long time and tried to fashion this in a way that has the least impact on people. It definitely impacts positions. And I've had the opportunity to see Kristen Newland working with folks or at least talking with folks from the CSEA and so forth, and I think there's a great deal of compassion and sympathy and an attempt to work a system that's fair and gets buy-in from the employee association as well as the district. I am very comfortable personally with these recommendations for that very reason. So I'll move it when we're done with comments.
Go ahead, Jim. I was going to just comment as well on the amount of work and effort that's gone into this to make this first round. This will not be the last round because of the impact of the closure of Diablo, but to make this first round well thought out and as far from the classroom as possible. You'll see that especially the reductions that have already been implemented all occurred at the district office. Several of these proposed reductions are at the district office. Some of them are kind of natural transitions as a result of attrition, retirements, some things that we're trying to do this in a way that makes sense to the people and the positions. I know it's hard to separate both of them, but it's a dance, and we're doing it as delicately and as carefully as we possibly can under the circumstances we're dealing with. So, Mr. Quisenberry.
I move approval of the superintendent's 2017-2018 budget reduction proposal.
And I'll second that.
It's a proposal by, a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's six in favor and one absent. Moving down to item number 9.04.
Yes, this is a follow-up with the CSBA delegate assembly to Region 9C, and the board previously acknowledged Vicki Meyer for its potential representative, and the ballot is here tonight for your final selection.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
I, as the other delegate from Region 9C, have had several years to work with Vicki. Her her voice as a longtime public education teacher has been very valuable up at the California School Boards Association and to me personally. So I'd like to move that we approve Vicki Meyer as the CSBA delegate.
Mr. Quisenberry?
I would like to second that.
It's a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that's 6-0, again, one absence. Thank you. Moving to 9.05. This is Board Policy 3470, Debt Issuance and Management. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, new legislation again came through in January that basically stated that the board has to adopt this board policy in order for us to go out and issue our next series of bonds. So this is this policy that before you is basically a debt issue and management. And so I looked at three different policies, actually one from DWK Attorneys first. We looked at one from John Isom initially. And then CSBA came out with their actual sample board policy. I think after looking at all three, I felt like the CSBA was the best. I then ran that policy by John Isom, who's our financial advisor, to look and see if there's any adjustments, any changes that he felt, you know, Shouse to Mays, or, you know, in terms of, he took like the Mello Ruse language and laid it out a little bit, what he felt was better in terms of communicating the policy. So this is just a first reading to go through. I know Mr. Buckman had a couple of questions in terms of the policy itself that we can look at with the layout. There's two versions. One is kind of without the markups, and then there's actually the actual marked up version, which is kind of the CSBA's kind of recommendation along with Mr. Isom's potential changes. So I'm here to answer any questions the board might have on the policy.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. I'll try to make this quick. I'm going to be referring to I tried to compare the two documents. I'm going to be referring to the second one, the one that's sort of cleaned up So it doesn't have all the references to CSBA. And I'm going to go down here and try and I keep losing internet connection, so I apologize. I believe it's the second one. Is that right, Ryan? The cleaned up one?
Yeah.
In the agenda?
That's the one that Kim has.
Yeah, thank you. So as I went through this, there were a couple of things that jumped out at me, and some of these paragraphs aren't numbered, so I'm going to ask indulgence on in trying to find these. In the debt issuance and management, the second paragraph down starts, the district shall not enter into indebtedness or liability in any year that exceeds the income and revenue unless two-thirds of the voters approve the obligation and expectations. And it's my understanding that actually through the efforts of Jack O'Connell that, and in the passage of our last bond, that we, this also affects the new version, which is just a supermajority. And so I don't know if we need to add that or not. I'll just raise that. I'll go through and raise some of these things, and then if there's discussion or answers, then we can move forward. Scrolling down. So later on, it does talk about the GO bonds as long-term debt.
Excuse me, Mark.
Yes.
On the first item that you had.
Yes, please.
I didn't understand it.
Sure. In the good old days, in order to get bonds passed in the state of California, like our Measure D, it took a two-thirds majority. So you need 66% to win. And that has changed now to what's a supermajority. So it's simple. I'm sorry.
Well, isn't it
55? That's why I was calling it super. And so that's not representative within this board policy. And and that's just a question I have.
I'll have to find the answer.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
I don't know why they didn't. If this was to like a parcel tax or something, so there.
I'm sorry. And this would still apply to a parcel tax.
Yeah, this may not be the actual general obligation bond like a parcel tax or something. But I'll find out.
Yeah, and it just, we may not need any reference to a specific bond type. Later on, there's a reference to QSABs, special finance.
What were you, Mark?
I'm trying to figure that out because these pages are not numbered.
QSABs is
authorized debt.
It's number four under authorized types of debt.
So
it goes through both short-term and long-term debt. So number four is the QSAB.
Okay.
Funding.
So if you're in a PDF version, I can tell you what page number because it's page number four in the PDF.
Right. 4 of 10.
It's 3470D is the top.
We good? The state no longer has QSAB money allocated, and I'm just thinking if we deleted that and just had the wording be special financing programs are structured, offered by the federal or state government, or other tax credits. I think using that as an example is just, we don't know if it's ever going to be funded again. So I'd like to see that discussed or an answer on that.
Okay.
In the original, on that same page at the bottom, so page four if you're in a PDF, it's under the heading Relationship of Debt to District Facilities Program and Budget. We good? Okay, so in the original CSBA version, this read, when considering a debt issuance, the board and the superintendent or designee shall evaluate both the short and long term. And in terms of this amount of money, these big issues that we're talking about, I would be more comfortable if the shall stayed rather than the may.
Last paragraph.
Yeah, last paragraph, first line. And it's, I'm only one board member, so I get that. Just underwriting. I'll skip that one.
And I can go through. I'll talk to Mr. Isom about kind of why the may versus shall. Was there a particular reason for it? And
thanks. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I think those are the big ones. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Good with the rest of it. And I really appreciate the work that was put into this. This is.
It's a big policy.
This seems like an AR, not a board policy.
So this is a first reading, so we'll be seeing it again.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Any other?
I think.
Okay.
Are we okay?
So we'll bring
them
back. Thank you.
Moving on to 9.06, update on emergency resolution related to the fire at San Luis Obispo High School. Mr. Pinkerton, you're very busy tonight.
You know, this is, again, we have to bring this back to the board. As long as we're still kind of negotiating with the insurance company what we're doing in terms of the fire and cleaning up the area. So I think this is probably the last time we're going to hear. We just met with the insurance adjusters last week to kind of talk about the claim itself and getting all the costs together. Thank you to the poor teachers at Slo High that had to, you know, not only have to deal with the situation, but then you ask them, hey, what was in your room? You got to go find prices and, you know, all those types of things. So it's just part of the process of what you have to do when something like this happens. So, you know, we'll make sure that they have everything that they need in further classrooms and moving forward. So hopefully those temp relocatables, they're currently putting those together right now in terms at Slo High, so the rain has not been helpful in terms of getting those finished, but our hope is to really get those displaced teachers in those classrooms as soon as possible.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this issue? This item. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
I'm up again. No,
this is really
nothing. It's just to bring it back to the board, let you know that we're still dealing with it.
Okay, then. And so you're still here. So we're now at 9.07, Measure D lease-leaseback project delivery.
Yeah, so as part of the resolution early in the board that the board approved, this would authorize us to go out to do an RFQ, request for qualification, so qualifications as well as price. So this is something that would be reported back to the board once that process is completed, along with any future contracts. So this isn't, you know, the last time the board hears about this. It would be something we would begin the process working with our attorney to put out the RFQ, RFP. We're going to be bringing back to the board some information about qualifying our MEMP, our mechanical, electrical, and plumbing subcontractors at the next board meeting. There's a process you have to go through with that as well. So we'll be bringing that to you at that point. But again, this just gets the process started for us to go out and issue that request for qualifications. And then specifically for the three projects that I showed the board earlier, those design, bid, build projects at Morro Bay High School, those at Slo High School, and then as well as C.L. Smith Elementary School. So those are the three kind of first out of the gate where we would be requesting price proposals for as part of that process. As in the future, if in terms of looking at with Mr. Holcomb and Mr. Palazzo, if there's things that we want to, you know, the Bishop's Peak MPR or the Baywood project or maybe the four painting projects around the district, we feel like that is better served in this lease-leaseback, we would be coming back to the board to do an RFQ, RFP for those particular projects. Okay? But so the three we're looking at today that we're asking to authorize are the Slo High, Morro Bay High School, and C.L. Smith, which were listed previously with the resolution.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, bring it to the board.
I'm going to move approval of the proposal to authorize the staff to issue a request for qualifications proposals to select contractors for lease-leaseback projects.
I will second that.
Okay. There's a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 6-0, one absence.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. We're moving on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if there's anything you would like to pull. Item number 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, acceptance of donations. 10.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.04, approval of purchase orders. 10.05, that was 10.02.
10.05, please.
Oh, 5. 10.05, approval of warrants and payroll. That would be pulled. And 10.06, action on claim against the district, Jeff and Maury Shear. And 10.07, approval of field study trip request, Morro Bay High School to Reno, Nevada, April 26th to 30th, 2017. So I'm looking for a motion on items number 10.01 through 10.04 and 10.06 and 10.07.
I'll move approval of items 10.01, 02, 03, 04, 06, and 07.
And I'll second that without repeating the numbers again because I'm not sure I can.
We have a motion by Ms. Roger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in. Sir, before we take that vote, is there anyone who would like to comment on that from the public?
We don't typically ask for comment on action consent.
Okay. Well, no. So all in favor of that motion?
Aye.
Aye. That is 6-0 with one six-zero with one absence.
And the reason I pulled 10.05 is as I was looking over the warrants and payroll, I noticed that there was a $300 payment to an apartment building in San Luis, and I was really curious about it. So I got in touch with Mr. Pinkerton, and it turns out that it's part of a homeless assistance grant that we got that assists families without homes. And I just want to say how glad I am that we're able to do that and that we're able to get that grant and help families in need. So with that, I'll move approval of item 10.05.
Okay, that's a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Goes 06, one absence. Thank you for calling that out. That is very important. And now advanced agenda. Any ideas for advanced agenda from anyone? And now on to board reports. Hi, Ms. Roger, I believe you were up first.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't realize my...
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. There will be other staff and board members attending a workshop or a conference on the National School Foundation Regional Conference, but as we move into the formation of a foundation through the tremendous negotiations of the superintendent, I was able to find a one-day workshop down in San Diego by the same organization, and I have to tell you, forming a foundation is going to be phenomenal for this district. There were people down there whose foundations for school districts were making millions of dollars, and with the seed money, we should be right up there with them. So I'm looking forward to hearing what others come back with, and I'll type up my notes from where I was. I'd also like to recognize William Walters, the District Teacher of the Year from Special Education at SLO High. He, February 13th, went up to Sacramento. I would say it was a gala. He was feted, and I hope that's the right word. He sent a picture of his trophy, which has got my trophies beat. This thing was a piece of art, and he so deserves it. And I also had the opportunity to visit Bishop Peak High School's PTA meeting, and a special thanks out to Lauren Madonna, who's the president at Bishop Peak PTA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. No, that's hard to say. Mr. Unger.
So last Thursday, I attended I actually testified in front of the NAACP on a charter school hearing down in Los Angeles and expressed concerns about accountability and oversight for charter schools. You know, the NAACP has come out and asked for a moratorium on charter schools. That's something we have concerns about charter schools, for example, and the concern that we have a shadow school district, for example, that takes away money from traditional public schools. It was quite interesting. It was quite interesting because they had a variety of speakers from people who were adamantly opposed to charter schools to charter school operators. So it was quite an interesting experience. I'm going to Oakland on Thursday again to learn more about charter schools. I'm like taking up the mantle on charter schools, and I think it's really important right now, considering the things that we're hearing in Washington D.C., so-called schools of choice, and as things develop from the Department of Education, it's going to be important for us to be not only knowledgeable about it, but be prepared to fight for traditional public education.
And then I have to give kudos to the Morro Bay High School staff. I actually was on the campus on 217 on Friday. I'm a student teacher supervisor for Cal Poly. I was supervising my student teacher when the power went out a little before 9 o'clock. The staff at Morro Bay High School was just amazing. The way Dr. Pruitt and the administration acted in a cool, calm, and collected manner. They were very organized. As trees were literally falling around the campus, there was no power. The classrooms were cold. It was definitely an issue of safety for the students. And I just want to commend the staff, all the staff at Morro Bay High School, for their handling of that emergency.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. Mr. Quisenberry.
I, too, visited Morro Bay High School, but not on Friday. I was there Saturday and driving around the campus and seeing what had been accomplished as far as clearing away trees and opening up the parking lot. Anyway, I did want to mention something that Mark and I were a little bit remiss in not mentioning. We actually went someplace on the last Saturday in January. Yes, we did, and we actually won prizes. It was the the presentation on the Brown Act that they do. So we went there, and it was very informative, not just for some, the ins and outs of the Brown Act, the fine points. We also got a chance to connect with a good number of board members from our surrounding districts, and it was actually a beautiful day, and a lot of good ideas. A lot of good ideas were shared. So I just thought perhaps you would like to know that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. I see no other lights glowing, and so I guess that's we stand at adjournment to meet again on March 7th. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
We do. We come.